number two of the Bible study, the Ask the Pastor Hour. Our numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Going out to North Carolina, Cornelius, North Carolina, to be exact. I guess that's where we're going. We're going to talk with Frank Raffato. He is chaplain with Peace Officer Ministries. Got a big day coming up here in toward the end of June, as I understand as well. Good morning, chaplain.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Very good. It's good to be with you guys.
Are we talking to you in North Carolina?
We are, and Cornelius is correct. We're just about a half an hour or so north of Charlotte.
Cornelius, North Carolina, and the weather is perfect there all the time, isn't it?
Well, if you use perfect loosely, yes.
Okay, all right. So you are a chaplain with Peace Officer Ministries. I know we've had conversations with representatives from Peace Officer Ministries in the past. And it is an important ministry. Tell our listeners what it is that the organization does.
Well, we our tagline, I guess you could say, is we want to serve those who protect and serve us. And we want to do that by bringing the gospel of Jesus to peace officers everywhere. I can tell you, as a former law enforcement officer, it's an important and necessary thing for people to hear that good news, especially in this line of work, where you just get to see the, shall we say, the less than perfect all the time.
Is the law enforcement arena environment generally hostile to your work or generally welcoming to your work?
Well, we often are do crisis response, that kind of thing, and they generally are welcoming of help. Part of what we do, though, is we build relationships with folks in that line of work. You build up trust, and that becomes the way that it becomes welcoming. And, of course, as is the case with our human nature, you do have folks who are not who are resistant, I guess I should say, and you know, we need lots of prayers in terms of that, especially as, again, as I said, they see so much that is, you know, to put it nicely, less than perfect, that it's a job where it's easy to become jaded. And so we do have to work on building those relationships that we would be welcomed.
It's a job where it's easy to become jaded. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, you come in, and I can attest to this personally. You come in right out of the academy, and you're full of spit and vinegar, and you're going to save the world. You know, as I like to share with people sometimes, you know, I put on that gun belt and that soft body armor and pinned on the badge, and you feel like you're 10 feet tall and bulletproof. And then you go out, and you begin to work, and as the days and the months and the years wear on, you realize that you're none of those. And that the world, you are not going to save the world. And even your little corner of it, it might be a little questionable. Now, that's not to, that's sort of the extreme feeling that you get. And then you begin to think, well, what's the point in some of that? And so to understand what we want to do is help the guys and gals that do that job, that it's a vocation, that God calls them to do that, that they... As Paul writes in Romans 13, that the governments God has put into place do not bear the sword for no reason, and that that there is reason for what they do, despite what they see, that God is reconciling this world to Himself in Jesus.
So your tagline, as you put it, serving those who protect and serve us. What is it about that line that I probably don't understand unless you explain it to me? I can assume, I mean, I know what it means to serve somebody, but what is it that is unique to your work because law enforcement is a unique kind of work?
Well, as we often see, I mean, it's for those of us of various age groups listening, from those who might remember those early shows of Dragnet. I remember as a kid seeing Adam 12 and SWAT and others, you know, what was the big thing on the side of the police cars? To protect and serve. And so we often see police officers, sheriff's deputies and the like, whom we call as somebody who's there to solve our problems. I think I said this in one of our other discussions. I don't think I ever got a call where they said, hey, listen, you and your partner go over to the Johnson's house on Main Street because they're having a great day and their kids are being obedient. And, you know, they just want to share that with you. No, you get the call because none of that is going on. And so we want to address that. And I guess the unique part of that is law enforcement is a culture. There's a language that they have. There's a sort of the rites and ceremonies. You know, if I was going to go to a foreign country, say to a South American country where they spoke Spanish, they, you know, the food that they eat, all the civil ceremonies they may have and all that, I need to kind of get up to speed on that so that I might be effective in bringing the gospel to a place like that. Well, it's the same thing for law enforcement because they do have some sort of cultural things going on that the regular citizen, just unless you experience it, just can't know.
Do you have a favorite cop show, a television show that you've find entertaining or you enjoy?
Well, I will say I think the CSIs do an okay job in terms of the science. Of course, I have to confess I was a homicide investigator in the Washington, D.C. area, and none of my evidence technicians ever went out and interviewed anybody. So that kind of thing is not quite my experience. I would say, though, to more directly answer the question, I think the Law and Order series are good because they show the detectives having to sort of do the legwork, if you will, as opposed to always relying on that hair fiber you're going to find or that South American green beetle that is just rare that just happened to be in this case for this TV show.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing.
Well, I think most of us realize that police work is much more difficult, but then, you know, you only got an hour to have a case and get it solved. But for those of us, our only exposure to the work of law enforcement is what we see in television drama. Is it fairly close? Is it a decent representation? Although, of course, everything gets solved in an hour. Is it a decent representation? Or do you and your law enforcement colleagues watch it and just laugh because it's just ridiculous?
Well, I think you have I think they do sometimes touch on some truths, as it were, in terms of the relationships officers have with each other and how they view the world. I guess I sort of spoke to the Law and Order ones because they really show the interaction of those investigators working together, the interaction that they have with the people that they have to go out and talk to solve these crimes, that sort of thing. And that's, I mean, it's one thing to sort of show a car chase and then, you know, they catch them and put the handcuffs on. It's another thing to kind of see the sort of relationships, the ups and downs you can have in a real human relationship. You know, I would imagine if you found a few of my old partners, they might tell you a few things that maybe got on their nerves about my habits or what have you, and I think some of those do, in terms of that, sometimes hit the nail on the head. Of course, TV, as you said, they've got to show it. They've got to solve the crime in an hour, or the other might sort of pet peeve is sometimes they might take the latest sort of cultural happening, how people might feel about police. You know, you name a major incident where the police are being scrutinized and sort of exacerbate that, I guess.
You ever watch these television shows where they're showing us dash cams and they're showing us police chases and they're showing us guys who are intoxicated and the scuffles that ensue and those kinds of things? Do you ever watch those shows?
I sure have. I I hate to confess, but yes, I have watched those. I found myself stopped on some of those. And I admit some of that is, oh, wow, that looks just like, and I can think of a time where something similar I was involved in.
Is that good public relations or bad public relations for law enforcement?
I think that's a mixed, I think it's mixed, and I don't mean to sound equivocal there, but I think it shows, hopefully people will see that it's not, you have to make very split-second decisions. You're expected to be, you know, an ambassador, a diplomat, a doctor, a lawyer, a rabbi, a psychologist, all in one package, if you will, is kind of expected of a police officer. And I think some of it shows that, you know, there are human beings working this, you know, sort of push your limit. And one thing I would say is that despite what media may sometimes portray as, you know, you hear about an officer who has or officers who, quote, you know, beat a suspect or, you know, they did something in the interrogation room we all find questionable or that kind of thing. But I think of all the interactions, the hundreds of thousands of interactions that officers have with people, police officers show great, great restraint.
Did you see the, this was quite a bit made in the news here in the last week or so, of the police officer who tased a 72-year-old great-grandmother. Did you happen to see that video?
I did not get to see the video.
Did you hear about it?
I did hear about it. And I would say, you know, and again, not having seen the video, I remember distinctly being relayed a story about an officer who was killed by a 72-year-old woman who he had taken in for drunk and disorderly, but didn't check her well enough because, well, you know, she was a 72-year-old woman and she had a .22 pistol in her purse and she proceeded to use it on him as he was taking her to the station. So I would just say that as cliched as it might say, you know, kind of you got to look at the whole context and all the things surrounding it. And admittedly, having to make some split-second type decisions, you know, I want to try to give the officer at least a chance to say something. And, you know, then if not, then of course, you know, officers are not above the law. They need to also be held accountable to the same laws we all are.
So you served as a police officer. I've got a page up here that shows your picture here standing next to a white squad car. You served as a law enforcement officer. You are currently serving as a law enforcement officer and as a chaplain. What is your role?
No, I am. I have retired from police work, and I went to the seminary there in St. Louis, and will be ordained and installed actually Sunday. As I just got to graduate.
Well, congratulations!
In May.
Congratulations. How many years? Go ahead.
My role then as a chaplain is really to be a support to law enforcement officers, and we do it through the nonprofit, the Peace Officer Ministry, so that we will go anywhere to serve those guys and gals who do that job.
So, how many years for you as a police officer before you retired?
Well, I did about 2 years in private industry doing security and safety, and then I did a little over 16 with Prince George's County in Maryland, right outside of Washington, D.C.
Have you ever shot anybody?
I have not, mercifully.
I think we know why you're saying mercifully, but explain that to me.
Well, I can tell you of one incident that I had where I would have been justified. However, one of the officers I was with walked right in front of me, so I, you know, pulled back, as it were. That would have been horrid. The other thing is I have a brother who was also retired from the same police department who he walked in on a robbery of a carryout restaurant and ended up young guy robbing the place turned and had a gun, and my brother had to shoot him. Now, fortunately, the robber survived, but a lot of fallout from that. I think many officers think that they're going to handle it well, and it ends up affecting them more than they realize that it will.
Well, I don't want you to tell us anything that's none of our business, but what do you mean by a lot of fallout from that?
Well, in terms of you walk into a situation like that, and I think my brother, he shared his story some, so I think this is not out of bounds, but, you know, you walked in, and your adrenaline just shoots right up. You revert to your training. You know, he fires off about 7 rounds in a matter of seconds.
Who does?
My brother does.
Your brother does.
Does hit the suspect, although he's not sure because the suspect continues to run. So he gets on the radio. They form a perimeter and they do find the suspect. But coming down from an event like that, that stressful event, that takes a while just physically. And then as part of that, even though everything he did was according to training, according to the law, he did everything correctly. Your gun is taken away from you. Your magazines for your weapon, your extra, to use more of the slang, the clips for your gun are taken away. You're set in a patrol car so that you can be taken to the station, apart from everybody else, so that you can be interviewed about it. So you begin to feel like, well, hey, I did everything I was trained for, and now I feel like I'm getting treated like a bad guy here. And then, you know, as that sort of, and we all sort of know it's part of the procedure to do that, but the other part of that is you have sort of the other guys who kind of come up to you and slap you on the back and, hey, good job, you know, kind of that hero kind of thing, and you don't really feel like much of a hero. And some people, my brother included, he would share that. He was very angry, and he did sort of question God, you know, what's going on here? You know, he was angry at the kid for the kid making him have to shoot. And, of course, a little angry at God for, you know, what's the deal with this whole situation, as it were.
So do you think that your brother's experience is more typical of most law enforcement officers who find themselves in that situation, or is he atypical?
I think he's more typical than not. Even if some of them might not identify, say, God as an object of their anger, some of them do, and that's part of the jaded thing that can accelerate that sort of thing, especially if you're in a place where, again, as I described, you get put in the police car in the back, you're taken to the station, and in my brother's case, it was just sort of part of the procedure. You're off. Well, he was off work for months until they cleared everything out, and so you're going from thinking, "Hey, I'm the good guy here."
Isn't that done for your protection, though? So
some of it is, but for some cases, you know, he walked in on a robbery. They found the gun. All the evidence points to him being cleared, and they still took it to a grand jury. Which, yeah, some of that is for protection, but unfortunately, it still psychologically, emotionally has this effect on you. You feel like, "Hey, I'm the good guy here. I did what I was supposed to do, and now you're sort of running me through the ringer," kind of thing.
So when it becomes apparent to the sergeant or the lieutenant on duty, the shift commander, they've got an officer now who has just shot somebody, and as you said, the adrenaline is still flowing, and there's confusion because I'm kind of being treated like a bad guy here. If you're in the building, is the shift commander going to say, "Go see Frank. Go see him right now"?
Well, many of the departments, usually, especially the larger ones, will have some sort of, they probably will call that division their psychological services division. And they'll usually have somebody from a behavioral science background to be part of the debriefing. And, yes, we do offer our services, and some departments have their own chaplaincy services where that is offered. I will tell you, in the case of my brother, that was not really available, and he would share that that would have been a help.
Did he turn to you at any point?
Well, we did. We talked quite a bit, and that's some of the fallout, too. Even as a family, even as a law enforcement officer, you know, him being my brother, there were some days, what do I say? you know, how do I help them deal with being angry or kind of having the blues because, well, doggone it, I'm the good guy, and they're making me stay home. I can't, which, again, some of the fallout of that, you know, some officers moonlight, maybe do security at a movie theater or something like that where they can earn a little extra money to support their family, and you can't do any of that. So a lot of things are affected by all that.
So you got a career in law enforcement. Why'd you go to the seminary?
Well, I think as part of that, and I just praise the Lord for his work through my parents and through friends and through my wife and others who I was fortunately brought up in a family, a Christian family, and just as I could kind of see how officers handle the stress of the job, and not all of them, some of them handle it fine, but there is a higher rate of divorce, alcoholism, and other related things like that to go on. And frankly, I looked around and said, I do not want to be that guy at the end of the career who's jaded and, just hates everybody, as it were. And my wife and I, frankly, we took a course and went through the entire Bible, and it just changed my entire perspective. And so I began to see my job more as a calling and all of that. And as I just became more involved with the church and all that, I got a sense that I was called into ministry, which I think that will, on the 21st here, be ratified by the Lord's church themselves.
You work for the government. Law enforcement is a government, extension of the government. Maybe could be national, can be state, can be local. But it's government. Can you talk about Jesus in your government job?
Well, I did. I think many people would say you can't, and certainly it's getting more difficult. But I found that you do have to build relationships with people. I found that guys, they would want to do things or say things or and not necessarily illegal, but things that as a Christian I, you know, just am not going to do that, guys. Thanks. Or when guys would complain about their wives, I would hold my wife up. In fact, I had a Bible on my desk often, and I would, I remember one case, just to tell a short story here. A guy was complaining about his wife doesn't do anything for him, you know, the whole sort of typical thing we might hear on a TV show about a guy, you know, complaining about his wife. And I turned around and I pulled out my lunch pail, which my wife had made me lunch that day. And I said, hey, look at this Dagwood sandwich my wife made me. And the guys began to sort of gather around. I said, and see how nicely ironed my shirt is? My wife did that. And before I continue the story, that's not all my wife does for me and all that. So, the guys did. It did sort of bring them around my desk. And I said, do you want to have a wife who takes care of you? I said, yeah. I said, well, listen to this. And so I read him Proverbs from Proverbs 31, and which, of course, talks about a woman who is sort of a superwoman who does the business of a household, who takes care of her children and all of that kind of stuff. I said, but guys, if you want one of those, you got Ephesians 5 and read that, and where it talks about the husband needs to love his wife as Christ loved the church. And I asked them, are you willing to give up some of your hobbies? Are you willing to give up your life for your wife? Are you willing to give up the things that you may enjoy so that she might be first?
All right, hold your thought right there. It's time for us to take our bottom of the hour break.
Okay.
We're talking with Chaplain Frank Rufato with Peace Officer Ministries, and we'll be right back. Here at AMA 50 KFUO, as we look forward to our anniversary on December 14th, we are so grateful to our partners who have become anniversary underwriters in 2009. We say thanks to Concordia Publishing House, publishing works of inspiration and faith for more than 139 years, and Lutheran Senior Services, specializing in enhancing life for seniors at 19 locations in Missouri and Illinois. Thanks for celebrating with us on the occasion of our 85th anniversary year.
Well, if you enjoy the Psalms, then I'd like to personally invite you to join me this Father's Day for Jubilation from 1 to 4 p.m. You're going to hear your best loved Psalm verses. You're going to hear personal reflections and stories and prayers and wonderful Christ-centered music. All those elements will be on the radio docket just for you that day. I'm Mark Hawkinson, inviting you to join me this Father's Day for Jubilation from 1 to 4 p.m. on AM 850 KFUO.
Where is Noah's Ark? Learn more about the search for it next on today's Creation Moment. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
As they rose towards the 15,000-foot plateau on the west side of Mount Ararat, they spotted a familiar-looking dark form. It looked almost like the drawing of Noah's Ark developed from descriptions provided by others who had seen what they thought was the Ark in this area. The year was 1989. Chuck Aaron and Bob Garby, both seasoned creationists, estimated that the visible portion of the dark object was about 60 feet wide, 30 feet high, with about 225 feet of it extending out of the ice and snow. The next morning they returned to the site and shot more video and photographs. With a storm coming in, working time was limited. The following year, other researchers returned to the site in a helicopter. While they could not land, they were able to get much closer to the site to get better pictures. From their vantage point, they concluded that the object was simply an unusual rock formation, a typical story in the search for Noah's Ark. It's a good thing that our faith in the truth of God's word does not depend upon physical evidence. Many creationists feel that even if the Ark were discovered and, say, moved to Times Square in New York, unbelievers would eventually concoct their own explanations to discredit the story of God's judgment in the flood.
To get a complete set of transcripts from Creation Moments programs, ask about the book Letting God Create Your Day when you visit us online at creationmoments.com. Or give us a call at 1-800-42-BIBLE. And join us again for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
WITS Mission. Find a new manager for the WITS End in Connellsville. It has to be just the right person. After days and days of searching, he may have just walked in the door. The Toy Man. Who is the Toy Man? Find out as we introduce you to our newest family on the next Adventures in Odyssey.
Saturday mornings at 8:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
AM 850 KFUO is underwritten in part by Reliable Heating and Cooling, with a showroom in the Mid-County Trade Center, 8463 Delport Drive. Reliable Heating and Cooling features Lennox air conditioning and furnace systems and services all brands. Reliable also provides senior discounts. Reliable Heating and Cooling, serving you from North, Mid, and West County exchanges. The next time you call Reliable at 423-3535, please thank them for being an AM 850 KFUO underwriter.
Welcome back to our Ask the Pastor Bible study. I'm Chuck Rathert. We have with us today Chaplain Frank Raffato. He is a chaplain with Peace Officer Ministries, headquartered in North Carolina. He was telling us a little bit about doing, I guess we could say, doing ministry around the desk there in the his place of work, his employment. And you're talking about the blessing of a godly wife and trying to share that with some of the men with whom you work, and you didn't get to finish the story. I can see this ending with guys kind of just chuckling and waving at you and walking away, or I can see this ending well, where you lift some spirits and maybe do some good. Which way did it end?
The answer to that is yes. And kind of finishing that, having that discussion. Now, this was while I was in the homicide unit, so I've got some of the grizzled guys who have sort of seen it all gathered around me, but there were some that did indeed sort of wave their hand and kind of laugh and go their way, and there's others though that we had a little continuing conversation, and I was able to share how the fact that Jesus being the center of the relationship in my marriage, that is what makes the joy for us, that despite our human frailties, that love for Christ really enables us to love each other. And so out of that, there were guys that before I left who would maybe pull me into the hallway and share some things with me and ask my advice and that kind of thing. And, of course, there were others who would poo-poo the whole thing, as it were. But I really was encouraged by the Lord in all those kinds of situations. And, I my prayer was always, you know, Lord, help me to seize those opportunities when they come and give me the right words. And so I think that to answer that, to come back around to the question, I think you can share your faith, even if you're working for a government entity. I think it's I think that is just a non-truth to tell people that because you work for the government, that you have to keep your mouth shut in terms of that.
So you said you worked with a homicide unit?
Yes.
I'm assuming that you've seen some horrific stuff, am I right?
Yes, I have. Not to be too graphic, but, you know, from train accident kind of things going on to, domestic homicides to everything in between.
And how do you deal with that? How do you, you're just minding your own business, and then the call comes in. And the next thing you know, you're on the scene of a homicide, and it's grisly, and you have to deal with it. Are you just the kind of person who has that kind of personal constitution that you can do it, or did you have to develop it, or did you never get used to it?
I don't know if you ever get used to it. Maybe in some ways you do, and officers have many coping mechanisms that, you know, sort of have a dark humor about things, you know, not to be crass, and they're not trying to be insensitive, but it is sort of a coping mechanism. I can think of a scene we were on where a guy was shot multiple times, and, you know, one of the guys walks up behind me and says, "Oh, boy, that's going to leave a mark." Well, you know, of course, mercifully, that was not said within the ear range of any family members or friends of this person, but, you know, it's not that the guy I worked with didn't care. But that was obviously a relief so that he could do his job, as it were. For me, again, I have to sort of beat the same drum. I think the Lord blessed me, I think, a little bit with the Constitution for that. But also that he blessed me with good support. And I would probably describe myself a little bit as sort of a happy cynic. And I think that's just sort of where my theology is, though, that I understand the depravity of humanity and yet see great hope because of what the Lord does and has done.
In the first three chapters of the book of Romans, the Apostle Paul articulates maybe as well as anywhere in the New Testament the depravity of man and the way we as human beings behave with this ball and chain of sin that we drag around. Do you have a take on depravity because of your work and your experience that maybe the rest of us living in the shelter of the suburbs or whatever don't have?
Well, I think that I certainly do not have to be convinced of it. And that is one thing for peace officers. They don't have to be convinced of that. And they even have a realization for themselves, many of them, that they're included in that. The problem is, as always, if the gospel doesn't make it into people's ears and into their hearts and their minds, what do you do with that? Even if you can say and see the truth of what Paul has said in those first three chapters about the depravity of humanity, and not have anywhere to turn, it's no wonder people can be cynical and jaded, that kind of thing, and kind of stay in that sort of rut.
You said before that if somebody like your brother winds up shooting somebody or somebody goes through a very traumatic experience in the line of duty, that there'll be somebody from... what did you call it, the psychological division, who's going to be on board in order to deal with the stress and whatever ramifications there might be psychologically there. But they're certainly not equipped or expected to do a spiritual perspective, are they?
No. They certainly are not expected that. However, I would say... Fortunately, in my brother's case, he did have one person he talked to who was a person of faith and who was sort of able to direct him in a way to help him to talk to somebody with on a more spiritual level about things. And of course, you asked if he had ever come to me. We have had many conversations. In fact, interestingly enough, he and I went on a retreat together just probably months before this, and he talked to me about, hey, how can you be a Christian and be the police? What if we have to shoot somebody? You know, so we had those sort of discussions. So I think it's good to get those early. You know, my hope in doing this chaplaincy work is to get to officers, you know, of course, of all ages, as it were, but especially to the young folks coming into so that they can see it as vocation and see that what they're doing is a good thing. And, of course, that's hopefully that they can help them, that I can help them to keep their eyes focused on the ultimate peacemaker, Jesus.
So it would seem to me that doing this kind of work, as you talked about here, the psychological stresses in addition to the physical stress, the coping mechanisms that officers develop in order to be able to deal with the stress of the job, it would seem to me that somebody in law enforcement who has been at it for a while might have layers and layers of protective mechanisms so that it's really kind of hard to get to the human being inside. But you as a chaplain, isn't that going to be one of the first things you're going to try to do if you're going to try to help somebody, is get to the human being inside? And if that is your goal, is it a lot harder with law enforcement, folks who work in law enforcement, because of all the mechanisms?
I think in a sense it is, partly because of what you described as those layers, and I would call those, you know, sort of a wall of distrust. And it's not that you want to not trust people, but, A, you're trained to be prepared for anything. I remember when I was a rookie and talking with I was standing and talking with my parents, and you're even taught sort of how to stand so that you can protect where your weapon is and all that kind of thing. And it was pointed out to me that, hey, that's your parents you're talking to. Why are you standing like that kind of thing? And it's just, it becomes inculcated in such a way that it just is sort of part of your life and, of course, your identity. And so for, to go back again to the relationship building, that's where that is, so that sort of the wall of trust can get brought down a little bit, or at least a door opened in that. And so, yes, that's probably the most difficult part.
Now, I'm a full-fledged baby boomer. And my generation boasts about we're the ones who came up with question authority, we think, anyway. We like to ascribe that to ourselves. Question authority and don't trust anybody over 30 and all that kind of stuff. So that the perspective on authority from the militarized America of our parents, who fought and won World War II on two fronts, to baby boomers who seem to be intent to rid us of authority in every way. That includes you, if you're a police officer. Am I overstating this, or has the boomer generation done a pretty good job of disrespecting, disregarding, and maybe even despising authority?
Wow, it's a very broad brush with which to stroke, but I think you're very close. I think there was a lot of that, certainly in younger years of that generation. I think that, however, I would bet if you really held their feet to the fire, so to speak, and said, you know, do you want anarchy? Would you like somebody to be able to break in your house at any time? Do you think it's okay? I think you'll find that, no, we don't want that. So then you really need to sort of open eyes by saying, well, how are we going to not have that happen? And if you can't tell me that, well, we need to make sure we hug everybody. Not that I'm against hugging anybody, but just sort of the cliche of, you know, the sort of hugs, not drugs kind of cliches that have come out, that kind of stuff just is not going to cut it, I don't think. And admittedly, some of that does come out of a worldview I have of maybe sort of the opposite of that. I see authority as necessary. I think that, as you mentioned Paul writing in those first chapters of Romans, he goes on later, he will talk about that in Romans 13, about how God sets in place authority for us, and that these authorities are really put in place by him, even the unjust ones. Now, that kind of can make us as Americans and we love freedom, as we might define it, and that might make us bristle a little bit, but I think we have to be measured in our rebellion against government or those types of authority.
Well, I certainly am not a statistician. I don't have the statistics to back this up. It's just kind of a perception, but I'd like to test it with you. If it's true that the boomers made it a kind of a hallmark of that generation to question authority and to refrain from putting trust in people like police officers or the military, it seems to me that it's produced a kind of a contempt for police officers that is just generally ingrained, which I think maybe has been passed on to the post-boomers now, because our children did not see us showing respect for police officers or firefighters, for that matter, or soldiers. They didn't see us showing respect, and so they don't really have much respect either. Maybe they don't have contempt, but, well, maybe they do. And I'm wondering if law enforcement people feel this kind of attitude of contempt, or if you think that, no, Chuck, it's not as bad as you make it out to be.
Well, I think there is a little bit of a mixed bag, and again, it's you know, what is one's personal experience maybe with crime? I've met many people in my career that, you know, who were victims of crime, and they may have not liked the police a whole lot before then, but they certainly wanted us around when the rubber hit the road, so to speak. And I found that there are folks that, demographically, you know, the fact of the matter is, the African American community has not always had great relations with the police in our country. That's just a fact. And I worked in a jurisdiction whose demographic went from largely European American to largely African American. And talking with many of those folks as they were moving upward into the middle class, working hard, good jobs and all that, they are as angry as anybody else that somebody's breaking into their home. And so I think there's a little bit of a change in that. I think that it might not be as bad, although officers do deal with it. And I think it's more certain segments of society, as it were. I think the problem is more related to how I think people get information, media, and how that sort of plays into how we perceive things.
So you're going to be ordained in a week, and you will continue your work as a chaplain with Peace Officer Ministries, and then someday you will retire, and it will all be behind you. When you get to that point, what do you want to be able to look back on and say, here's where I made a difference?
Well, I hope that with the training that the seminary has given me, that the life experience that the Lord has blessed me with, that I'll be able to look back and see people who have come to know Jesus, who are able to begin to have a worldview that comes through, that's a godly worldview, scriptural, sound worldview. To have helped in the process of God doing his work to change people's lives.
Do you have children?
I do. I have three daughters.
I suppose that there is certainly plenty of room for women and daughters in law enforcement. How old are they? Are they grown?
Well, my oldest is going to be starting her sophomore year in the fall at Southeast Missouri State.
Okay, so they're in that upper level of education. Do you encourage them to think about law enforcement as a career, discourage them from thinking about it, or just stay out of it and let them handle it the way they want?
Well, we have, and when I say we, of course, my wife and I have really tried to help them to see where they might be gifted. We've really tried to work on worldview, as it were, and that, you know, we've talked about police officers having vocation. You know, you as working in radio and communicating with people, that's vocation. The lady who's listening to this right now, who's in her home, who is a homemaker, or whatever the proper term nowadays is for that, that's vocation. All these are vocation, and so we've really tried to look, help them to see it that way. Now, I don't know that they've really expressed any serious want to be in law enforcement. And I confess, as a dad, I'm a little hesitant. I don't want to discourage them, but I admit, knowing what you see and what happens, you know, since it's your kids, as it were, I admit I've got a little hesitancy.
So if we don't have the regard for authority that we used to have, I mean, your card here that Diane Summers provided to me has your slogan on it, serving those who protect us and serve us, who protect and serve us. Sometimes people look upon police officers as those who hassle us and restrain us. They don't see what you're doing as all that particularly helpful or productive at all. They see it as a negative. And, of course, police officers would like to advance it as a positive, service and protection. When it comes to a negative view of authority, which some people have for policemen and officers, do you find that that flows from a negative view toward God? Is there some kind of connection there? Because ultimately, God is the supreme authority in our lives, whether we like it or not. Is there a connection between contempt for police officers and maybe a contempt for Almighty God?
I think even if somebody would not admit to that explicitly, I think you've hit on something there. Officers are the face of the law. If you will, you know, they are often referred to as officers of the law. And, of course, God, that comes out of what God's law is. And as you said, God is the ultimate authority. And so there's a saying that the law always accuses. And so when we're confronted by the law, whether it's we're pulled over for speeding or some other such thing, it's an uncomfortable thing to be accused. And so, yes, I think there is a connection there, even if people don't fully realize it. And it's, again, back to that human nature sort of thing, where we are naturally turned in on ourselves and we want to be our own authority.
We're running out of time here, and I have one more question for you. There was in the news here recently, a few weeks ago, about a pharmacist working in his pharmacy when two young men came in, armed. One of them had a pistol, and the pharmacist got a gun and shot one of them. He went to the floor, and then he chased the other gentleman out of the store, and then allegedly came back into the store and pumped 5 rounds into the abdomen of the wounded assailant who was still on the floor. And so he has since been charged with first-degree murder. Now, some people said, you know, put yourself in his position. You're just going about your business, running a legitimate business of being a pharmacist, and all of a sudden, out of the clear blue sky, you have two people who are attacking you, and they're armed. And you can understand why he might have behaved the way he did, given that situation. From your perspective as a law enforcement officer, knowing what it's like to have that adrenaline burst to suddenly find yourself in that situation, are you sympathetic to that man, or do you say to yourself as a chaplain and as a man of God, there is no excuse ever to pump five more rounds into a guy who is wounded and down?
You know, in the nitty-gritty of the humanity of that, I do have a little bit of understanding of the anger he had. But again, it's you know, scriptural, you know, be angry but do not sin. You know, his initial confrontation with those guys, the initial shot that he had that eliminated the danger was perfectly legitimate, and I think he should be lauded, as it were, for having the wherewithal, as it were. However, when you leave and come back and do that, and that's where the first degree, because now malice aforethought, you've allowed your anger to get to that point where sin manifests itself. And so, you know, I think the prosecutors are right to pursue that. Now, whether or not a jury will, 12 people will think that the same way or not, you know, who knows. But we do have to, even in those situations where we might be justified for the inch that we have, we can't take the mile.
Chaplain Rufato, do you love your work?
I do. I love working in the parish. I love working with the officers out in the field, doing this chaplaincy thing. And it has become, it's our Lutheran theology of law and gospel, and I get to wield both, and it's just a marvelous thing.
Well, you know, it occurred to me, if memory serves me correctly, that in the book of Acts there is a gentleman by the name of Cornelius, and my memory is that he was a centurion.
Yes.
Is that right?
That is correct.
I just find that to be a curious coincidence, a winsome little blessing for me anyway, that Chaplain Frank Rufato would be a resident of Cornelius, North Carolina. Because I tend to think of centurions as kind of law enforcement officers in a way.
Yes, I think that's a great way to look at it. And we do often, when talking to law enforcement officers, introducing them to Scripture, that will be one of the ones that we use to say, see, there's law enforcement right here in Scripture. And right there in Acts 10. And of course, he was devout and God-fearing. And all of that.
Amen. Well, thank you, sir. If somebody wanted to communicate with you, is there a good way to do that? Can we send you an email?
Yes. In fact, if you want to go to peaceofficerministries.org, there's a place where you can email us, and you can see a little more about our chaplaincy ministry on that website.
God's blessings to you, and congratulations on your forthcoming ordination.
Thank you very much. It was very enjoyable, and thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. Chaplain Frank Rufato, he is with Peace Officer Ministries, headquartered in North Carolina, and that's our Ask the Pastor conversation. Tomorrow we take up Colossians 4, verses 7 through 18 with Pastor Matt Roglin, and we hope you'll be tuned in then.
Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the Internet at KFUO.org. For a free copy of the Bible study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org. The Bible study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.